Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Once again, Yu Darvish struggled in the fifth inning, but he also struggled in the first, the second, and the third. Another underwhelming start for the Cubs' big free agent pickup. Are we back to panicking about Yu Darvish, or should Cubs fans focus their angst on an offense that hasn't scored more than three runs in eight games? Meanwhile, the Cubs could certainly use a bat like Sammy Sosa's right now. I caught up with the former Cubs slugger in his home in Miami. We discussed his career and his exile from the Cubs family. Should he have to apologize to be welcomed back to Wrigley Field? Man, the Cavs are back. They never lead in regulation, yet steal game one in Toronto. Is LeBron back on the NBA Finals track? And the Warriors keep winning while Draymond Green keeps irritating. Now one national analyst wants to punch him in the face. And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a really good day, loving this beautiful weather. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show from Score Sports Radio 670. He's Mark Grody from the Chicago Tribune. He is Teddy Greenstein from MLB.com. He's our guy, Phil Rogers. All right, Darvish, not good. Yu Darvish struggled again today. Phil, any concern as you look at Yu Darvish today that, hey, man, now we're at May the 2nd, or relax?
Well, you can't make the John Lester parallel anymore. You know, his April was the same as John Lester's. Lester turned the corner, and the next six starts were great. Darvish had a good start against Milwaukee to start the homestand. But, you know, the one today sort of erases that narrative. So I think there probably has to be some concern. You know, I mean, it's not unusual for a guy to change teams, you know, and have this sort of a start. I looked at the numbers today, compared them to the numbers versus Milwaukee. They're almost the same. His velocity was almost the same. He was getting strikes on his sliders. The swing and misses were almost the same. None of them are high-end numbers except for the velocity. He was like, yeah, I think his top today was right at 98. That was the same as the start against Milwaukee. You know, the location. I mean, we see that one pitch way up with the wind blowing the way it's been the last few days at Wrigley. That's the opposite of what you should be trying to do.
Yeah, that was batting practice. That was a problem. And as somebody who has been in relax mode, don't worry, this is, you know, Lester, all these guys who signed with the Cubs for big bucks always struggle at the beginning. But this is starting to be a concern, because also it just seems like his body language is so bad. You know, he gives up these bombs, and it's kind of like, oh, I mean, he looks like now he's completely lost.
It is a concern, obviously. He's supposed to be doing better than this. But, you know, I use the very simple formula. If a pitcher is losing it, he loses velocity. And as Phil pointed out, he has not lost that velocity yet. But I watched the game today, and I'm looking at these highlights here. These are meatball pitches. These are, I don't care how hard you throw, if you don't have movement on the heat that you're bringing, then these guys, the Rockies, are going to hit the ball out of the park. And for whatever it's worth, the Rockies schooled the Cubs last year at Wrigley Field, too. Took 3 out of 4 in dominating fashion. Take 2 out of 3 in this series as well. So the Rockies are very comfortable playing at Wrigley Field.
You know, I looked at Darvish and David DeJesus, and I sat in the green room and watched every pitch. Yeah. And except when I fell asleep in the seventh inning, we were getting crushed. Everything was center cut.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Run back over the plate. Yeah, he got Arenado, I think, 97 elevated. But the next time, it was 4 inches lower, and that ball was just crushed. Why? Where is the movement gone? This guy supposedly had the gyro ball and seven pitches, and you can't ever sit on one thing. He doesn't look good.
Well, he again today, he threw 5 or 6 different pitches, depending on how you break them up. The one pitch he didn't throw this game, he did against Milwaukee, was that 64-mile-an-hour curveball. But his curveball's still in the low 70s.
That'd be the one I could catch up to.
Well, yeah, you could sit curveball.
The splitty that he threw today and got a strikeout was a really good pitch. He never went back to it.
Yeah, well, it's, I wrote about Darvish in spring training, and I remember talking to Chris Jimenez and who they should have kept. I keep saying
this. He will be back within the week. He'll be back. He will probably catch his next start.
Probably. Absolutely. They should have kept him. And I say this is the Chris of, you know, of dropping him. Chris didn't really like his splitter for what it's worth. But, you know, I do think part of it is that Darvish, he's very particular in what he likes. And he's not somebody who just adapts to another clubhouse easily. So there's language and there's living and there's new pitching coaches and new teammates. So I think that is part of it. And yet it doesn't address the fact that these pitches are awful and he's getting tattooed.
Right?
Well, I think it's interesting that you brought up the idea of Jimenez and you too, Phil. The Cubs don't want to do that. They so badly do not want to go back to the David Ross system. I mean, it's not ideal for any pitching staff to have a guy with a personal catcher, but you're getting to that point to make this guy better, to make him more comfortable. Maybe you do have to do that.
Why not? I mean, what's wrong with a personal catcher if it works?
I mean, probably cost you a reliever is probably the thing.
And it may cost you offense too. And a guy who can
compared to the other backup catcher,
Caratini's not lighting the world on fire.
No, I agree. And you know what? Another, you know, with Caratini, it seems like Kyle Hendricks requested to have Caratini as his catcher the last time out as well. But you know, you want to have your starting catcher in there as much as possible in terms of his bat and his ability to throw guys out all over the bases.
All right, let's talk about the offense. Where has the Cubs offense gone? It is really, really struggling. 8 straight games, first time since 2015. Cubs offense has gone 8 straight games and scored 3 or less runs. Now, Phil, it's a 5-2 homestand, so it looks good. You go, 5-2. Half a game back.
That right Brewers series was unbelievable. The lack of offense in that Brewers series. And last night's game, after the home runs in the first inning, I mean, that would have been fall asleep time. Even though it was a tight, close game that could have gone either way, it kind of reminded me of, I don't know if you guys will remember this, Joe Maddon raves about how great the atmosphere when the Tampa Bay Rays came in and played the Cubs in 2014. But it was like the dead ball era. Nothing was happening. And that's kind of where they are now. And, you know, Mark, you can back this up, I think. You know, you get out to Wrigley Field when the wind's blowing out and everybody thinks it's going to be a high offense day. This collection of Cubs, the Bryant Rizzo Cubs, don't really feast on that. And I don't know why, but it's just like set up for a disappointment if you think the weather's going to give you a high run game. And so now that's been the case with two different hitting coaches who would approach batting practice differently or, you know, preparation differently.
And coincidentally, both of those guys homered today, and you typically don't see the Cubs lose when both of those guys go deep in Bryant.
Ian Happ is a major disappointment. Yeah. I mean, they penciled him in to be a big guy. And I do think if you had – they're not a real deep farm system loaded with hitters. You know, I mean, they don't have a lot of guys now pushing for the big leagues. So if you had alternatives, no reason that you don't use them to give, you know, like Happ, to me, he's never been quite comfortable that he's going to be a good defensive center fielder on a team that has won in part because of its defense. And I think the lack of a position for him, you know, and when he didn't get off to a good start, now his playing time's not going to be great. And that's a tough hole to play your way out of. And I think that's a significant issue. Anthony Rizzo, you know, yes, he has 2 home runs in consecutive days now, which is nice.
He had 2 hits today.
But you know, he's not been in this kind of a hole. And you do have to wonder somewhat about his back, which put him on the DL, and how much that's contributed to this hole. And Addison Russell, you know, again, you look at him, how did this guy drive in 96 runs 2 years ago? I mean, he did it hitting .230. But he's still, his batting average is not a lot off of what it was 2 years ago, but he's just not getting those dynamic moments.
But for all their problems, I mean, they're how many games over .500?
Five games over .500.
I mean, that's pretty good.
And a half game out
of first. If you can hit that poorly and have your big one of your big money starters
struggle
that bad, I mean, they're surviving compared to the other side of town where they lose every one run game.
All right. It's been 20 years since Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire energized baseball with their chase of Roger Maris's home run record. Sosa's time with the Cubs came to an abrupt end after the 2004 season, and his legacy among the Cubs organization and its fans has been questioned. Well, I had a chance to fly to Miami and sit down and talk with Sammy at his home recently. And among the topics we discussed was Kerry Wood's comments that Sosa should be welcomed back to Wrigley Field. Here's what Sammy had to say in response.
Kerry recognized what I done in Chicago, you know, and he had, you know, the guts to come out and say, you know, look, I have my house. This is my house here in Miami. Chicago is going to be my house no matter what. the ownership, they had to understand that, you know, that, you know, I'm a humble man. I'm not a man that have an ego. When I was playing pro, I was a little big because I was focused on what I'm trying to do. But right now, you know, I'm going to be 50 years old, man. You know, my granddad, you know, my grandparents. So, you know, things change. You know, me, you know, if I made a mistake, I don't have to say that, but if I made a mistake by then or offend anybody, I don't have a problem with that. I'm sorry, you know, because I was, you know, I was in my zone.
So he was a very gracious person to deal with in the 4+ hours that we spent with him. You didn't care.
How did you not laugh when he said, I'm a humble man and I'm a man that doesn't have an ego? I've covered hundreds of athletes and coaches, if not thousands, in 22 years of the Tribune. He has the largest ego of anyone I've ever covered. And you know this. He was a terrible teammate. I mean, everything centered around him. So that's nice that he's saying, you know, try this with revisionist history and all that, but give me a break.
Unfortunately, though, as we all know, it doesn't matter if he was a terrible teammate. It's about the fans. And he was absolutely loved.
There are tens of thousands of people that are Cubs fans simply because that guy wore a Cubs uniform.
Right. And
true.
You're right. It seems like
indisputable.
I never really had to deal with him as a reporter. But, yeah, it seems like he was a bad guy behind the scenes in terms of being a teammate. But I'm sure there's been lots of extremely popular players who are bad guys behind the scenes.
I didn't have any problems dealing with him. I don't think you did you?
You know, there were some bumps, but he handled things in good fashion. He didn't look to embarrass people publicly. He would call you into a back room to tell you he wasn't happy with something you did. So, you know, and in fairness from Sammy's side, when he was leaving town, his last 2 or 3 years were super painful. And it was, you know, I go back to Steve Stone had the great line, which is about the Cubs and the Chicago media and the fans. You know, you don't create Frankenstein and then complain when he burns down the town.
Correct. That's exactly what Steve said.
And so to me, there's no winners on either side of this. And the big question, shouldn't Sammy have to apologize to
the Cubs?
And that's
our Ankin Law poll question, by the way.
Well, I'll hop in with a big no. He shouldn't. And it's silly that the Cubs haven't made up with him and brought him back because it keeps this storyline going. You don't go to Miami to talk to him if they did this 2 or 3 years ago when McGuire got brought back into baseball, the Giants lined up behind Barry Bonds. Now, it was a different story. You know, I think Sammy did some things the Cubs didn't like, and he wasn't very honest and open about doing it. And, you know, put different people, including his teammates, Kerry Wood, what Kerry Wood says publicly and what he says privately, I think that's a different.
Couldn't agree more. Sammy says he's got the guts to say that. No, the guts would have been to say he shouldn't come back,
no
which is
former
probably how
teammate,
he really feels.
No former Cub is closer to the Ricketts family than Kerry Wood.
Right.
I think Kerry Wood influences how the Ricketts family sees Sammy Sosa. And for whatever reason, this could have, should have ended long ago, and then it wouldn't be an issue at every year at the Cubs convention. And, you know, it just, like, it serves no purpose to keep this.
Like, Cap, you realize,
so,
Kerry,
so what you're saying
just saying
is
that just say it, right?
Okay, so I spoke to him off camera.
Okay.
He sat in that chair and talked to John Graff, one of our producers.
Right.
And when I spoke to him off camera, on the phone, for a good 25 minutes.
Sammy, you're talking about?
No, Kerry.
Kerry, okay.
I said, so you really truly feel this way? He's like, look, we were, quote, we were 25 alpha males. He goes, were there some strained times? Yes. Did I do things, him talking about himself? Yes. Were there things he did? Yes. It's enough. The man came to play hard every single day and performed. He should be back.
That part is true. I also know about Kerry Wood. He's not looking to make headlines, and he knows if he says Sammy should not be welcomed back to Wrigley Field, that's the headline that he does not want to make whatsoever. So, look, time passes. It's not like Sammy committed any felonies. These are not awful things he did, but he was a bad teammate and they did not like him at the time, and there was a corked bat and there was a lot of chemistry involved. There was also a lot of hard work and talent involved.
But
to do this interview and where he kind of cops to nothing and calls his critics devils and says he doesn't have an ego.
It was the critics about
joke.
His appearance.
There were hundreds of days when Sammy Sosa had a good day, He stood there as long as the media wanted to talk to him. He had a bad day. Somebody else had a bad day. Adios. He was out the back door. And the other guys were standing there explaining what went wrong. You know, Sammy never stepped up that way. And I think teammates came to look at him like he's always there. You know, when he needs you,
well, the boom
he's
box.
Always there.
I mean, every major league team allows the starting pitcher to choose the music that day. Cubs didn't operate that way. He had a specific person employed to carry his boombox around from city to city,
but he decided what the music was going to be. Is that Sammy's fault, or is that the organization for allowing that garbage to go on?
Absolutely both. And there were and to finish the thought about the music, there would be times where there's salsa music on one end and Kerry Wood is playing country on the other end, and you know, if you were in the middle, you were hearing both. I mean, it was a farce. So there's no doubt the Cubs under Andy McPhail and Jim Hendry and all those guys should have reined him in, but he was the only show. He was the only reason to come to the ballpark for a lot of those years. So they used him, and his ego became out of control.
The best manager he had for him, far and away, was Don Baylor. Don Baylor
really?
Got the absolute best out of him. If you look, Don Baylor got him to hit to right field. He got him to pay attention to his fielding. He had a couple of his best years. Not the MVP year. The next year, 99, was unbelievable. But that kind of went away. And Dusty Baker came in. Dusty Baker's a great manager. I like him a lot. But he let Sammy do whatever he wanted to do. And he had a good line about it. Well, you know, I wasn't the guy that created all these problems.
Yeah.
So at some point, it got too big to try to fix. And it just got out of hand.
I'll remind you real quick, as I was covering this team, that Sammy would show up late to spring training.
Yeah, obviously, the last day you could report.
Last day. He would show up. He would scream, "Welcome to my house." And all his teammates would be rolling their eyes. And I asked Don, "Hey, is it a big deal that he's getting here then?" And Don would say, "It's a big deal to them." So there's a reason Sammy never won. He was an amazing individual player, and we also had some good times. I mean, I covered him for 3 years, and it was not all bad at all. He could be charming, but a lot of garbage went along
with
him.
So do you believe they should welcome him back?
I would like for him to have a moment of honesty and say some stuff that's true. Does he have to apologize? I don't know. It's up to the Ricketts. I think Tom Ricketts has handled it fine, honestly.
I think it's like one thing that the Ricketts regime has gotten really good at, as all teams should be, is listening to their fans, whether it's playing Go Cubs Go after games, whether it's downsizing the seventh inning stretches they have done, listening to their fans, everything they're doing around Wrigley Field, listening to their fans. Honestly, if they feel there's a groundswell of Cubs fans who want Sammy Sosa back, then he'll be back. I don't think there is either.
Yeah.
But that's all it comes down to.
I did a Twitter poll today. And, you know, I have a lot of Cubs fans that follow me.
Yes.
We're over 7,000 votes of our 75% want him back.
Are there any people who are not going to Cubs games because Sammy hasn't reconciled with the team? Is there anybody boycotting the Cubs?
Somebody has taken their seat if they boycott.
Does it matter?
Him.
I mean, yeah.
Right. It
they
does
say they
matter.
Want to see him. You just did a sympathetic interview with him. It's fun to see a great player. I mean, hey, Giants fans cheer Barry Bonds. Doesn't mean he's a good guy.
It doesn't. But if Giants fans want to cheer Barry Bonds, should the Cubs fans have the right to at least reconnect? He
if they want
been
to.
In our city.
If they want to, they will.
Since 2007.
Come to Chicago and have a night for the fans. Nobody's stopping him.
I just find it ironic that a guy who the president at the State of the Union calls a hero to two countries is not allowed whatsoever into our lives at all here.
I mean, he's not allowed in the country?
No, no. I'm talking as a Cub.
Okay.
He
can come back and do an autograph show or take pictures with fans.
He's one of the greatest players to ever put on the uniform.
True.
And there is no acknowledgement whatsoever of any of his accomplishments. Nothing.
How do you want them to acknowledge him? Should he get a statue?
No, I don't think he deserves a statue.
Okay.
I don't. I'm not a huge statue guy, though.
Okay.
I'm not. But do I think he should come back, run out to right field, wave to the crowd? Yes.
Those were great moments. But weren't you also a big critic of his?
I was.
Yes. So why?
Because I always believed. Well, did you read what I wrote?
I did read what you wrote.
Oh, I think I explained it pretty clearly. I always believed that he wanted a job. I was told he wanted to be paid and work for the organization.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And once
the first part is true. Wanted to be paid.
Right. And once he made it clear... He wants nothing from them other than to be welcome back.
Right.
He goes, I make plenty of money.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
What are they going to pay him? He made $72 million over 4 years.
The Blackhawks pay their ambassadors exceptionally well.
Okay.
Ryan Sandberg's an ambassador. Kerry Wood's an ambassador. Sammy doesn't want any of that. If all he wants is to be welcome back to Wrigley Field, to wave to the crowd and say, I had pretty good memories here. 20 years later, I think it's kind of, it's time.
It wouldn't bother me. He can come back. He produced some of the greatest memories of that ballpark. It was fun. I just would like a little honesty, and I hope in the rest of the interview that you ask some tougher questions.
What do you? We asked him about.
Okay.
And he
did you ask about PEDs?
Yeah, he will not talk about it. Okay. He will not. Why do you need that?
I'd like it. If you're going
to
interview, if you're going to interview somebody, ask questions. I could give a flying rip
that Teddy Greenstein needs it. Why do you need him to stand there and go, yes, I used? Why do you need that?
I don't understand that. I like to, if you're going to go down there and interview him in Miami, why are you not calling him on when he says he doesn't have an ego? That's a joke.
Well, you
weren't
there.
That's false.
No, maybe he did when he played here.
Okay.
He was, when we sat for 4 hours.
Right.
You can ask anyone on our crew. He was outstanding to deal with, and he did not show that side.
I've dealt with Sammy in every possible light. And sure, if you kneel in front of him and ask him super complimentary questions, he's going to say, as he said to me many times, oh, you're a great writer, all this and that. I see through the BS, man. I mean, there's a lot of that with Sammy, okay? So if you're going to go down and interview him, I hope they're going to be questions along the lines of also, I mean, I am curious about his physical appearance. When he said that, wait, only the people who, like, pay his check?
You want to hear the bite?
That?
We can play the bite.
Let's go.
Because I can tell you, he looks much lighter, but he looks way better than he's been portrayed.
Okay.
Way better. Here's Sammy.
You know, those people, they sometimes criticize me. They don't know me. They don't put food at my table, you know, and they don't pay my bill. So when you pay my bill, you have opportunity to talk about me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I laugh because they make a comment like they grew up with me together, like they was in Dominican Republic or Shushan Boy with me together. And they make a comment like they don't know me for years. These people never see me before. They never have a chance to speak to me. You don't need negative in your life. You need positive. And when you in the environment with the positive people, why you want to listen to somebody that's going to ruin your day? It's impossible. You know, I stay away from that. You know what I mean? That's the devil talking. I'm staying away from that. I'm here. I'm in a good place.
He's also good with, if they don't bring him back, he's in a good place.
Fantastic. So, he should be happy.
You know what the beautiful part about all this is? Is that the groundswells we're talking about for Sammy Sosa would be so much bigger if the Cubs weren't doing what they've been doing in terms of the winning. That this is
because
a peripheral.
They have something else to sell.
They have something else to celebrate. And this would be, I think, like you said, 70% of the fans that you kind of polled said that they'd like him. I don't think that they're raising their hands and they're trying to get him, but they would enjoy it because it'd be fun because everything is sort of a little side session at Wrigley Field now as opposed to being the headline at Wrigley Field.
Right.
The peripheral
and
stuff used to
be him and Harry.
Right. The peripheral stuff that we see at Wrigley Field used to be the headline. That used to be why you go. Now you go because you got a team that can win the World Series.
This isn't going to be the only time this comes up this year because this is the 20-year anniversary of the home run race, which was remarkable. And you go through that September a lot of different moments, you know, McGuire hits 61, you know, then Sammy breaks, you know, does it again, has a two homer game against Milwaukee. And it was as dramatic as anything I've covered. And if you take the morality out of it and the question of how careful you had to be because of the PED issue, just the drama of, you know, nobody thought they'd get to 70. You know, and does anybody remember Sammy was ahead 66-65 on Friday night? You know, McGuire hits five home runs against this Montreal pitching staff throwing kids out there. Sammy had the two homers off of Jose Lima, who was just like throwing BP fastballs to him at Wrigley Field in a meaningless game.
I think that's who he's hit the most career home runs off of was Jose Lima.
There were so many moments in that race, and it was such a season. And it's going to be remembered. There's going to be documentaries and a lot of attention paid to that this September. So certainly that it's going to be on the table. The time is right. If you know, if the Cubs wanted to just bring Sam, you know, bring Sammy in, give the media a chance to talk about 98.
I'll just say this. We all kind of pick our heroes, and we all pick players who, you know, you want your kids to look up to. And, like, Kerry Wood is somebody who I would tell my daughters to look up to. And Sammy Sosa is not. So he entertained us. He's, you know, still Sammy Sosa, that name, that'll always be important for a lot of people. But I just don't think we should pretend that he was something he wasn't.
All right. Don't forget Facebook Live tonight, 7 o'clock on our Facebook page. We'll go through more of that interview, take your questions. Ryan McGuffey and John Graff, who were with me on that trip, will also be participating. So hope you'll dial it up on our Facebook page tonight at 7. LeBron James once again dominated, but his supporting cast stepped up as well to steal game one. So the Cavs once again bound for the finals. And Draymond Green is at it again, forcing one NBA pundit to want to punch him in the mouth. Mark Schanowski's in here to talk NBA playoffs and draft next.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Well, LeBron James always finds a way to get the job done. And Cleveland goes into Toronto and steals game one. This guy is just an absolute beast. I mean, there is nobody in the game at his level. He is unbelievable. And the Cavs, in overtime, find a way. But you know who's even more unbelievable? Mark Schanowski, Mr. NBA, who's here in the studio.
You guys all right here?
Yeah.
Walking into firestorm.
Bill and I are keeping it cool. Don't worry. Yeah.
Okay. Cool with Teddy. I just think he's completely out of luck. So LeBron last night, they find a way to steal it in a game they never led till overtime.
I'll tell you what, the rookie, OG Anunoby, did a really good job defending LeBron. He was 12 of 30 from the field. He was 3 of 15 in the fourth quarter in overtime. LeBron, that seven-game series against the Pacers took a lot out of him. He admitted that he didn't do anything between the two games, and so he was a little bit tired. They needed J.R. Smith. Kyle Korver hit some big shots late, but I don't know how Toronto recovers from this. They've already had that psychological disadvantage going up against LeBron, and now to give away game one at home in a game that basically Cleveland was going to concede. They're going to be, we're tired from the Indiana series. We'll give you game one, and then we'll start playing at our best. Now they win that game the way they did. I don't know how the Raptors recover.
Well, you talked about the seven-game series and LeBron James basically max effort.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he gets a triple-double last night. Is there any chance that we see a tired LeBron James or that he runs out of gas? Because he kind of admitted that's what he was on the verge of having happen to him. But obviously last night he had it back on. I know it sounds crazy, I still think Toronto has a chance in this series.
Well, it was interesting in his post-game news conference that he mentioned the injury that he had suffered in Game 7 against the Pacers. It was reported during the broadcast he was having some cramping issues in one of his legs, so everyone thought, oh, it's no big deal. But LeBron said he did nothing on the court at shoot-around Tuesday morning because he was still suffering the after effects of that very physically demanding series. Maybe we don't see LeBron James at his best in this Toronto series, which might give them a chance. J.R. Smith hit 5 of 6 threes, which he's not going to do every game. He's one of the most erratic players walking the face of the earth. So maybe that gives the Raptors some hope going into game two, but obviously they have to win game two.
The amazing part to me was that Toronto missed all those shots, and they were good shots.
Mm-hmm.
They were open threes. They were looks at the rim.
How about Valanciunas right at the rim?
Puts that tip in 4 out of 5 times.
And you know what's going to really hurt the Raptors fans more than anything? Within the last hour, the NBA released the last two-minute report, and they said the referee should have called a flagrant one on Kevin Love.
On this play right here.
DeMar DeRozan should have been a travel, right?
Well, they said that initially it should have been called a foul on DeRozan, which caused Love to travel. But under the circumstances here, the officials had the right to go to the monitor and review that play. And usually when there's any kind of play that might be considered flagrant, they will automatically review that. The rule is if they call flagrant one, as they were supposed to at that point, DeMar DeRozan gets two free throws. Toronto gets the ball. If he makes both free throws, they're up four with a minute to go.
For what it's worth, and I know Cap doesn't care about my opinion, as he said in the last segment, I don't think that's flagrant, because when you grab a rebound, if you're being harassed, you're told to
swing your elbows.
Yeah, but the rule is it doesn't have to be
intentional.
You know, I just
any contact
to, me, that's
to the head and neck
five,
area.
10 years ago wouldn't have been, but I hear you.
Yeah, is an automatic flagrant foul. Yeah. They don't have to judge intent.
Mm. All right, Draymond Green has gotten under the skin of some current NBA players. Apparently, he got under the skin of a former player, current star analyst. Take a listen to what Charles Barkley had to say at halftime of last night's game two, and then you'll hear Draymond's response.
I just want somebody to punch him in the face.
Which one?
American Express halftime report.
I really do. I just want somebody to punch him in the face.
Why you don't like Draymond?
Yo, Jay in Atlanta.
I want to punch him in the face.
Why you don't like Draymond?
I'm just telling you, I want to punch his ass in the face. I do.
If you feel that strongly about something, he's seen me a million times. If he feel that strongly about it, then punch me in my face when you see me. If you're not going to punch me in my face when you see me, then shut up. It's no different than somebody sitting behind a computer screen tweeting, I'll knock you out, and you never see him in life. Well, he's seen me a bunch of times, and he'll see me again this year. Punch me in the face when you see me, or if not, no one cares what you would have done. You old, and it is what it is. So if you ain't going to punch me when you see me, then stop talking about it. Period. Drop the mic.
Get Draymond off Draymond's lawn.
Yeah,
he wins.
Today on the Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000, number one show in town, got Charles Barkley on.
Lacrosse promotion.
As it started, Charles Barkley said, I apologize. I was wrong. I never should have said that. So he wanted to clear the air with Draymond, with Waddle and Sylvie, his guys.
And right when they welcomed him onto the show, he went right into the apology. So obviously he's heard from Turner. He's heard from people around the league saying, what are you doing? I mean, obviously, right.
Is that
show
so
is
much
so popular.
Worse than what he's – I mean, yeah.
No,
isn't that
I mean,
a bit of a figure of speech?
They do that stuff all the time.
Right.
But the thing that was interesting was that, you know, Shaq was laughing, yeah, and both Ernie and Kenny were trying to get him to back down from that, but he didn't.
What about the underlying story with Draymond Green? It seemed like – the Warriors' first run, Steph Curry, unbelievable, out-of-nowhere year. He was such a good pro, and he was such a just a solid guy on that team and a big, you know, obviously a big piece. But it seems like as every year's gone on from them, you know, it does seem like he's becoming like a Bill Laimbeer of this era.
He's
or
the
something.
Modern-day Dennis
but
Rodman,
I don't,
right, with
what,
a better
what,
outside shooting touch.
Was he that on that first Warriors team that had the great run? Because it sure didn't show up.
I think that because of the fact that the other guys are known for their scoring, he's had to basically distinguish himself in other areas. That's by being a tough guy. That's by being a rebounder, by being a good passer from the forward position. And one of the interesting things in that game last night was that he got involved. He got tangled up with Anthony Davis, and they were kind of rolling down the court. This was classic Dennis Rodman, where he wouldn't let Anthony Davis get up. And so he tries to get up, and then they hook legs, and he kind of pulls him down again. And it was exactly what we saw in the 1998 finals, where Rodman and Karl Malone got tangled up.
Yeah.
Same way,
yep.
I'm not going to let you get up. Here's the tape that Tom Cooper got caught for us. Again, Rodman knew that at that point in his career, he couldn't defend Karl Malone, so he's going to try to get under his skin. Same thing. I mean, it's almost the exact same. It's like Dennis Rodman, you know, had taught Draymond Green how to do that.
Don't you think if Charles had said, which he did, if I was playing against him, I'd punch him in the face. But then he said, I want to punch him in the face now. That's where he crossed the line, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, and it really didn't make any sense. I mean, he clarified some of those comments when he talked to Waddle and Sylvie today. So he said that one of the things that really annoys him about Draymond Green is that even though it's in the scouting report, we're going to let Draymond Green shoot threes. When he misses one, he doesn't do anything. When he makes one out of five, he goes over to the opposing coach and yells at him, like, you better guard me. He just feels like that Draymond is trying to carry himself like he's a superstar player when he really is just a glorified role player. If you put Draymond Green on the Sacramento Kings,
right,
or, you know, the
Bulls.
Ouch. No. Phoenix Suns, you know, team that's really bad and rebuilding like that, he'd just be a guy. You know, I hear a lot of people say Draymond Green is a top 20 player in the league. I don't buy that at all.
I think the guy that Tibbs wanted, remember?
Well, he would have been a good fit on that team. He would have been a good fit on any good
better
team.
Better than Marcus Teague.
Because of the things that he can do. He does a lot of the under-the-radar stuff.
All right, Bulls Talk podcast coming up.
Yeah, Kendall, Will, and Vinny will be in. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs, also look ahead to the draft. You know, the lottery, 2 weeks. right here in Chicago.
Mm. Maybe the Bulls can.
So we're going to have a special
15th.
Remote show on the 15th.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
So look for all the details on that coming out, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We invite all the fans to come out, and hopefully the Bulls cashed in 1.7 to get Derrick Rose. They got 5.3% chance to get the first pick this year.
DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley, probably.
Or Luka Doncic.
Maybe. Yeah. Who won't work out for any NBA team, he said.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Thanks for being here.
All right, Cap.